You Forever by Tuesday Love Sang Rampa, read to you by Blue Friend, September 2016, Lesson 20. Soon, we hope to deal with telepathy, clairvoyance, and psychometry, but first of all, you must permit us a digression. Permit us to deal with another subject. We are quite aware that you are thinking by now that we wander off the subject, but that is deliberate. We know what we have in mind, and often it pays you for us to draw your attention to a subject and then go on to something else, which is so very necessary by way of a foundation. We will make it clear now that people who want to be clairvoyant, who want to be telepathic, and to have psychometric abilities will have to proceed slowly. You cannot force development beyond a certain limit. If you will consider the world of nature, you will find that exotic orchids are indeed hothouse plants, and if they have been forced in their development, then they are very fragile blooms indeed. The same applies to everything, the growth of which has to be stimulated artificially, or which has its growth forced. Hothouse plants are not hardy, they are not reliable, they fall prey to all sorts of remarkable ailments. We want you to have a very healthy dose of telepathy. We want you to be able to see into the past by clairvoyance. And we want you to be in such a position that you can pick up a stone, for instance, from the seashore and tell what has happened to that stone throughout the years. It is possible, you know, for a really good psychometrist to pick up an article on the seashore where it has not been touched by man, and to visualize quite clearly the time when that fragment of stone was perhaps embodied in a mountain. This is not exaggeration. It's very ordinary, very easy, when one knows how. Let us then lay a good foundation, because one cannot build a house on shifting sands and expect that house to last for very long. In dealing with our foundations, let us state first that inner composure and tranquility are two of the cornerstones of our foundation. For unless one has inner composure, one will not have much success at telepathy or clairvoyance. Inner composure is a very definite must if one is going to progress beyond the most elementary primary stages. Humans are indeed a mass of conflicting emotions. One looks about and finds people hurrying about in the street, dashing about in cars, or rushing off to catch a bus. Then there's the last-minute dash to the shops to lay in supplies, possibly before the shops close for the weekend. We are always in a jangled state. We seethe and boil, and our brains send off sparks of rage and frustration. Often we will find ourselves growing hot. We will find that we are under tension, that we have queer pressures within us. At such times, we feel that we could explode. Yes, you might almost do that, but it will not help one at all in the field of esoteric research if one has such uncontrolled brain waves that one blanks out the incoming signals. The signals are coming in all the time, from everywhere, from everyone, and if we will open our minds, we will pick up and comprehend these signals. Have you ever tried to listen to radio during a thunderstorm? Have you ever tried to watch some television program while some idiot was parked just outside your window and you were getting his car ignition as zigzag flashes through the screen? Perhaps you have attempted listening to a far distant station over the howl and crackle of static generated by an electric storm. It's not easy. Some of us are interested in shortwave reception and listen in to the whole world. Listen to the news from different countries. Listen to music from various continents. If you have done much in shortwave work and have listened to far-off places, you will know how very, very difficult it is at times to pick up speech because of all the interference caused by static, both man-made and natural. Car ignition noises, the clicking on and off of the thermostat in the fridge, or perhaps someone is playing about with the doorbell just when we want to listen. We get hotter and hotter under the collar as we try to concentrate and pick up the message from the radio. Until we can get clear of some of that static in our own mind, we are going to have difficulty with telepathy, for the noise a human brain churns out is far worse than even from the most battered old car. You may think this is exaggeration, but as your powers increase in this direction, you will find that we have rather understated the matter. Let us develop this theme a little further, because we must be quite sure of what we're doing before we do it. We must be quite sure of the obstacles in our path, because until we know the obstacles, we cannot overcome them. Let us consider it from a different angle. It is a fairly easy matter to telephone from one continent to another, provided that there be a suitable cable laid beneath the ocean. The transatlantic telephone line from, let us say, England to New York, or to Adelaide from England, is a case in point. Using these telephone lines under the water, one still gets garbled patches of speech. At times, also, there will be fading, but on the whole, we can understand quite well what is being said. Unfortunately, much of the world is not connected by telephone cables. In certain areas, such as between Montreal and Buenos Aires, there are not telephone cables, but abominable things called radio links. These horrendous contraptions should never be dignified by the name telephone, because using them appears to us to be a feat of endurance. Speech is frequently garbled beyond recognition. Speech is chopped up. High frequencies are cut off, and low frequencies are cut off too, and so instead of getting a human tone of voice, which we can comprehend, we get a flat monotone, which could have been spewed out without inflection by some robot. One strains and strains to make out what's being said, but all the time there is a further grave disadvantage. One has to keep talking all the time, even if one has nothing to say, in order to keep the circuit open. Added to that, there's the static, which we've already mentioned, but there are various refractions and reflections from the different ionized layers around the Earth. We mention this to show that even with the best equipment on earth, speech by radio telephone is a matter of hit or miss, and in our experience, it's more often miss than hit. We personally find telepathy to be far, far easier than a radio telephone. You may wonder why we keep on writing about radio and electronics and electricity. The answer is because the brain and the body generate electricity. The brain and all the muscles send out pulsing electrons, which are in fact the radio program of the human body. Much of the behavior of the human body and much of the phenomena of clairvoyance, telepathy, psychometry, and all the rest of it can be so easily understood by reference to the science of radio and electronics. We are trying to make this easy for you, so we are going to ask you to very carefully consider all this matter about electronics and radio. It does mean much to you if you study electronics. The more you study radio and electronics, the more easily will you progress in your development. Delicate instruments need to be protected from shock. You would not expect to have an expensive television receiver and bang it about. You would not expect to have an expensive watch and keep banging it against the wall. We have the most expensive receivers of all, our brain. And if we are going to use that receiver to the best effect, we must protect it from shock. If we are going to let ourselves become agitated or frustrated, then we are going to generate a type of wave within us which will inhibit reception of waves without. In telepathy, we have to keep as calm as possible. Otherwise, we're going to be wasting our time in making any attempt whatever at receiving the thought of others. The first time, we shall not get much results in telepathy, so let us concentrate on composure. Whenever we think, we generate electricity. If we think calmly and without any strong emotion, then our brain electricity will follow a fairly smooth frequency without high peaks or without low valleys. If we have a high peak, it means that something is interrupting the even tenor of our thoughts. We must be sure that there are no excessive voltages generated, and nothing which could cause alarm and despondency must be permitted within our thinking processes. We must at all times cultivate inner composure. Cultivate a tranquil manner. No doubt it is annoying if one is hanging out the washing and the telephone rings just when one has one's hands full of wet, soggy clothes. No doubt it is frightfully irritating when one misses the special bargain of the week at the local store. But all these things are very mundane. They do not help us at all when we leave this world. When we do terminate our stay upon earth, it will not matter greatly, if at all, whether we have dealt with the great supermarkets or with the little man in the corner store. Let us repeat again, in case you haven't heard it before, that we cannot take a single penny away with us to the next life. But we can, and we do, take away all the knowledge that we have gained, for the distilled essence of all that we learn upon earth is that which makes us what we are going to be in the next life. Therefore, Let us concentrate on knowledge, on the things which we can take away. At present, the world has gone money mad, possession mad. Countries such as Canada and the United States of America are living under a false standard of prosperity. Everyone seems to be in debt. Everyone is borrowing from the finance companies, alias of the old-fashioned money lender, now done up with chromium plate. People want new cars, each one flashier than the one the year before. People dash about. They have no time for the serious things of life. They are chasing the things that do not matter. The only things that matter are the things we learn. We take away with us all the knowledge that we acquire during our stay on earth. We leave behind us, if we have any, money and possessions for someone else to squander. Wherefore it behooves us to concentrate on the things which will be truly ours, and that is knowledge. One of the easiest ways of acquiring tranquility is by breathing in a regular pattern. Most people, unfortunately, breathe in a manner which could be termed suck and blow, suck and blow. They pant along, really starving the brain of oxygen. People seem to think that air is rationed. They have to gulp it and puff it out. They seem to think that the air they take in is hot or something, for no sooner is it in than they're anxious to get rid of it and get the next load. We should learn to breathe slowly and deeply. We should make sure that all the stale air is removed from our lungs. If we breathe with only the top of our lungs, that air which is at the bottom becomes staler and staler. The better our air supply is, the better our brain power will be, for we cannot live without oxygen, and the brain is the first thing to be starved of oxygen. If our brain is deprived of the minimum amount of oxygen, we feel tired, sleepy, we become slow in our motion, and we find it difficult to think. Sometimes, too, we find that we get a bad headache, then we go out into the fresh air, which cures the headache and also proves that one does need plenty of oxygen. A regular breathing pattern soothes ruffled emotions. If you are feeling thoroughly bad-tempered, out of sorts, and really would like to do violence to someone, take a deep breath instead, the deepest breath you can manage, and hold it in for a few seconds. Then let it out slowly over a few seconds. Do that a few times, and you will find that you calm down more quickly than you thought possible. Do not just suck in breath as fast as you can, and then blow it out as fast as you can. Draw in the breath slowly, steadily, and think, as it is truly the case, that you are inhaling life and vitality itself. Let us give an illustration. Compress your chest and try to expel as much air as you possibly can. Force your lungs in so that, if you wish, your tongue is hanging out from the lack of air. Then, over some 10 seconds of time, completely fill your lungs, throw out your chest, take in as much air as you can, and then cram in a little more. When you have got in as much air as you possibly can, hold it for 5 seconds, and after that 5 seconds, slowly let out the air. so slowly that you take 7 seconds to get rid of the air within you. Exhale completely. Force your muscles inwards to squeeze out as much air as you can. Then start all over again. It might be a good idea if you do this 6 times, and you will find that your frustrations and your bad mood has gone. You will feel better inside, too. You will find that you're beginning to get inner composure. If you're going for an interview, which really matters, before you actually go into the interview room, take some deep breaths. You'll find that your racing pulse will race no more. It will steady down, and you will find that you are more confident, have less to worry about, and if you do this, your interviewer will be impressed with your obvious appearance of confidence. Try it. There are a shocking number of frustrations and irritations in everyday life, and these things are very harmful indeed. Civilization is quite the opposite of that. The more one gets tied up with the trammels of civilization, the more difficult it is to get peace. The man or woman in the heart of a great city is often more irritable, more nervous than the man or woman in the heart of the countryside. So it becomes more and more necessary to gain control over one's emotions. People who are frustrated and irritable find that their gastric juices become more and more concentrated. These juices are, of course, acids, and as they become more and more concentrated, they boil up within us and eventually reach such a degree of concentration that the inner protective lining of our stomach or other organs cannot resist the attacks of the strong acid. Possibly, some part of our inner lining is thinner than the rest. Possibly, we have some small blemish inside. Some hard piece of food which we have swallowed may have caused slight irritation in the stomach. Then the acid has a place in which it can work. It works and works on that thinner place or that irritated spot, and in time it penetrates the protective layer within us. The result is a gastric ulcer, which leads us to considerable despondency and pain. As you have probably heard, gastric ulcers are known in the complaint of the irritable and nervous. Let us think about all these irritations. You may be wondering where to get the money to pay the gas bill, or why the electric meter man is fussing around your door when you're busy with something else. You may wonder why do so many silly people send you stupid circulars through the mail. Why should you throw them away? Why not let the sender destroy them first and save you the trouble? Well, take it easy. Think to yourself. Ask yourself this question. Will all this matter in 50 or 100 years' time? Whenever you get frustrated, whenever you get almost overcome with the press of ordinary, everyday living, whenever you think that you're going to be submerged in your trouble and your difficulties, think about it again. Think, will any of these matter? Any of these worries be important in 50 or 100 years' time? This age of civilization, so-called, is a very trying age indeed. Everything conspires to make us build up unnatural brainwaves, conspires to make strange voltages generate within our brain cells. Normally, when one thinks, there is a fairly rhythmical pattern of brain waves which doctors can chart with special instruments. If the brain waves follow a certain pattern, then we are stated to have some mental affliction, so that when a person has a mental sickness, probably the first thing that is done is to chart the waves to see how they diverge from the normal. It is a fact known to Easterners that if a person can subdue the abnormal brain waves, then sanity returns. In the Far East, there are various methods used by medical priests whereby the distressed person, the person who has a mental affliction, can be assisted in restoring his brain waves to normalcy. Women, particularly at the change of life, are subject to the generation of a different wave form within the brain. This, of course, is because of the change of life. Various secretions are shut off or diverted to other channels, and usually the woman in question has been listening to so many old wives' tales that she really does think she's going to be in for a bad time. And because she firmly believes she's going to have difficulty, she does. There's no need for any difficulties at the change of life, provided a person is properly prepared. The more unfortunate cases are those women who've had an operation called a hysterectomy. Hysterectomy is an operation whereby the menopause is brought on forcibly by surgical means. Admittedly, that is a secondary reason. The operation is usually for some specific purpose, like disease, but the end result is the same. A woman has an operation, hysterectomy, and the sudden termination of the former way of living and the sudden diversion of essential hormones causes a severe electrical storm in the brain, which, for a time, may make the woman unstable. Suitable treatment and sympathetic understanding really can cure such an unfortunate sufferer. We mention this merely to indicate that the body is an electric generator, and it is so very essential to keep that generator with a constant output, because if we have constant output, we may be said to have composure and tranquility. But if the output is upset and varies through worry or certain operations, then tranquility is temporarily lost, but it can definitely be regained. Let us get back, though, to our 50 or 100 years' time. If you do good to a person, then that is something that will matter in 50 to 100 years' time, because if you do good, you brighten some person's outlook, just as if you do harm to a person, then you depress their outlook. The more good you can do others, the more you can gain yourself. It is a law of the occult that you cannot receive until you're willing to give first. If you give, be it service or money or love, then you in your turn will get service or money or love, and no matter what one gives, no matter what one receives, everything has to be paid for in time. If you receive a kindness, you have to give a kindness. But that is not to be dealt with in this lesson, as we will refer to it in more detail when we deal with karma. Be sure to keep yourself calm. Be sure to let yourself become tranquil. Let yourself realize that all these petty restrictions, all these asinine interruptions when we're trying to think or trying to do something will not matter in a few years' time. They are pinpricks, petty irritations, and they should be relegated to their correct status as annoyances and nothing more. Inner composure, peace, and tranquility are there for you if you will accept them. All you have to do is breathe so that your brain gets the maximum oxygen and think that all these silly little irritations will not matter in half a century's time. Then you will see how unimportant they are. Do you see what we are getting at? We are trying to show you that most of the great worries simply do not happen. We have something threatening us. We fear that something unpleasant is about to occur. We work ourselves up in a frenzy of fright, and we go about in such a state that we hardly know if we are on our head or our feet. But soon we find that our fears were unjustified. Nothing happened. All the fright was for nothing. We have got a real mixture of adrenaline within us, all boiled up, ready to galvanize us into action. And then, when the fright passes, the adrenaline has to be dissipated, and it makes us feel quite weak. We might even shake with the reaction. Many of the world's famous men have said that their major worries never happened, but that they still worried about them and then found that they had been wasting their time. If you are troubled, you're not tranquil. If you are agitated, you cannot have inner composure. And instead of being able to receive a telepathic message, you are radiating or broadcasting a dire message of utter chaos, of frustration, which not merely blanks out your own reception of telepathic messages, but blanks out receptions quite a distance around you. So for your own sake, and for the sake of others, practice equanimity. Keep calm. Remember again that all these minor irritations are minor irritations and nothing more. They are sent to try you, and they certainly do. Practice composure. Practice seeing your difficulties in the correct perspective. It may be annoying to find that you cannot go to the cinema tonight, particularly as it may be the last night that the film is shown. But it is not of earth-shaking importance after all. It is of importance that you learn, that you progress, because the more you learn now, the more you take away with you to the next life, and the more learning you take away to the next life, the less number of times you have to come back to this doleful old world of ours. We suggest that you lie down, let yourself relax. Lie down and shuffle about a bit so that no muscle, no part of you is under tension. Lightly clasp your hands together and breathe deeply and regularly. As you breathe, think in rhythm with the breathing, peace, peace, peace. If you will practice that, you will find that a truly divine sense of peace and tranquility will steal over you. Once again, push out any intruding thoughts of discord. Concentrate your thoughts upon peace, upon quietness, and upon ease. If you think peace, you will have peace. If you think ease, you will have ease. We will say to you by way of concluding this lesson that if people would devote 10 minutes out of every 24 hours to this, the doctors would go bankrupt, for they would not have nearly so much illness to deal with. End of lesson 20.